Jessica Lade, John Wallach. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 18th. Two Finger Jakes Blues Band will be at Two Finger Jakes Blues and Jazz Club in Farmingdale, 8 p.m. The fourth annual holiday concert and sing-along featuring the Broadway Irish tenor Sharon Sheehan will be at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor, 7 p.m. B.B. King's welcomes 45 RPM at 8 p.m. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, December 19th. Jerry Seinfeld will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury for two shows, 7 and 9:30. The Beatles' Magical Orchestra, a benefit for Hurricane Sandy, will be taking place at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington Village, 7:30. And KJ Farrell's welcomes 45 RPM in Belmore. Your concert billboard for Thursday, December 20th. Straight No Chaser will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury, 8 p.m. Joy Bear Band will be at the Emporium in Patchogue. And that's your concert billboard.
That was your WUSB concert billboard. Check the online billboard at wusb.fm/CBB. Enjoy the shopping, the games, the music, the people. Best of holidays to you.
Okay, I'll keep hitting it till it works. Our microphone is a bit under the weather. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Originally, we were supposed to have the second part of an adventure with Kyle and myself involving a phone and driving to Manchester, but something happened.
Lord, take this badge off me. I can't use it anymore. too dark to see. Felt like knocking on heaven's door.
That's the sound of a musician named Ted Christopher from Scotland. And that's part of an EP that came out in the late 1990s as a musical response to horrific events that took place in a small town in that country known as Dunblane. It was called the Dunblane School Massacre, and took place on March 13th, 1996. And at that time, it was probably the most horrific school shooting ever, and it took place in Scotland of all places. But it led to some widespread changes in that country, and obviously didn't have an effect worldwide, had an effect certainly over there. 16 kids were killed on that day. 43-year-old Thomas Hamilton entered the school with four handguns and then killed himself. A thing we see over and over again, too many times, the same basic modus operandi. And we saw it on Friday, again in this country, a place called Newtown, Connecticut, not far from here, maybe about 60, 70 miles as the crow flies from here. And, you know, I think it's, this one is very different from so many of the others that we have reported on over the years. And, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but we've been talking about these kinds of things for years. And it even gets to the point where it's not news anymore. I found, looking at the news this past few days, that there was some I missed. There was a mass shooting in Seattle that both Kyle and I didn't know about that happened in a coffee shop. There are so many that you lose track of them. It's sad. It's pathetic. It's reality, and it's something that maybe now we're finally going to face. This is what's different, because people are talking about this like they've never talked about any of the other ones, because the victims were so young, so innocent. And we're all still in shock. I say that as people in this country, not just people in that particular part of the state, of our country, of people who have kids in school. No, everybody. People that you just see in day-to-day life mention it. They need to talk it out. We all do. And we're only on for 45 minutes tonight, but I felt it was a much better use of airtime to address some of these issues, mark this particular period in history, because I really hope that this marks a turning point, that this is not something we're going to forget about or assume it just won't happen again, because it obviously will. We're in a very sad state here, and I'm not kidding myself into thinking that the best gun control in the world is going to prevent things like this. No, it won't. Obviously not. Look what happened in Norway, where guns are certainly not as prolific as they are here. It's always going to be a possibility, but clearly, when there are less of them, when they are more difficult to get a hold of, when certain kinds are banned altogether, then the odds by anybody with any grasp of statistics or math or anything like that, the odds go so far down. Now, you know, there is an appropriate amount of time to wait before diving into the whole debate about gun control and things like that. And certainly even I was not in the mood to hear about it on Friday because of the shock of seeing what was unfolding and just trying to come to terms with that. So the last thing you need is somebody hounding you saying, well, if we had had this, then this wouldn't have happened. Not the time. But we've had a all too brief amount to digest this now. And by the same token, we can't just resume our lives and make like it's all going to take care of itself. It won't. It won't. And it's not up to anyone except people like us. It's not up to the politicians, because they just reflect what the voters say. And what I mean by that is they reflect what they think will happen the next election day. Not necessarily the right thing, but what will get them reelected. And if a certain group of people speaks louder, they become more noticeable and they are taken more seriously. Well, the time for this particular opinion, which I strongly believe is the majority opinion, it's time for that opinion to be loud and clear and non-compromising and not afraid to keep at it. Because it's easy to say that this is on the people that are all into guns and support the NRA and all of that, but it's also on those of us who don't try to change things. If we give up, if we just assume that we can't win, if we don't want to get into an argument, if we're afraid, well then, that's every bit as much of a reason for things not changing as the people who push it all through. I'd like to play something else from that record. I've been listening to it over and over because it just it's very moving. And again, It's musician Ted Christopher who put together four tracks, and this was released shortly after the events of Dunblane. This track is also, they made reference to this term, the bairns of Dunblane. Bairn is a Scottish term that means child, and that became the refrain in this particular EP that that was released. And, well, let's listen to that, and we'll come back and pontificate a bit more, just a couple of minutes.
Cold winter wind blows snow through the air, wrapped up in warm, the little children don't care. No mother's goodbye kiss could ever foresee the pain of the chill that would fall on the bairns of Dunblane. Flow swollen from the late winter rain through the broken heart of the town like a permanent stain from the tears of the world that could fill it all again. Tears that were shed for the bairns of Dunblane. Who can comprehend and take in the life of a child? But 16 bloody times a 5-year-old died. He brought hell to Dunblane, that to hell he is damned. For there are some things that even God can't understand. The whole community shattered, that somehow must go on. Scars that will not fade as the years turn. When the lakes turn yellow with the flowers of the broom again, remember spring never came for the bairns of Dunblane.
In response to what happened in Dunblane, the Gun Control Network was founded and was supported by parents of the victims. Families and friends initiated a campaign to ban private gun ownership. They named it the Snowdrop Petition because March is snowdrop time in Scotland. And I got 705,000 signatures. The Cullen Inquiry into the massacre recommended that the government introduce tighter controls on handgun ownership and consider whether an outright ban would be in the public interest. The report also recommended changes in school security and vetting of people working with children under 18. The Home Affairs Select Committee agreed with the need for restrictions on gun ownership, but stated that a handgun ban was not appropriate. In response to the public debate, the then-current Conservative government introduced a ban on all cartridge ammunition handguns, with the exception of 32-caliber single-shot weapons in England, Scotland, and Wales. And following the 1997 general election, the Labour government of Tony Blair introduced the Firearms Amendment of 1997. We've talked about this. Banning the remaining 22 cartridge handguns in England, Scotland, and Wales, leaving only muzzle-loading and historic handguns legal, as well as certain sporting handguns, known as long arms, that fall outside the Home Office definition of a handgun due to their dimensions. And that was something that was supported by the people. And it was something that has proven effective in many ways. Obviously, this kind of a thing could happen again because it's not that difficult to get your hands on things even when they're illegal. We all know this. But the odds do drop dramatically. So there is a conversation going on now in this country that is unlike anything I've ever seen. I remember when Gabrielle Giffords was shot in Arizona, the response was, get more guns. Yeah, we're not going to let this stop us. It was very hard to understand, but that is the response sometimes to things like this. Not this time, because this time there's just no way to handle it. There's just no way to process what took place, where you have the most innocent of people becoming victims of some misguided belief that this is how our country should be, that this is what the forefathers wanted. And it's not. It is not. And it's time we stopped even pretending to have that conversation. It's about people that like to have toys, and I have nothing against people who play with things, but these are very dangerous toys, and they have no business in our streets, in our homes. So the assault weapon ban, which we've been loath to talk about, not here on this show, obviously, but in the halls of Congress, because, well, elected officials are afraid of not being elected again. Well, we need to make them realize that if they don't deal with this to our satisfaction, they certainly will not be elected again. Nowhere in any constitutional paper, any place, in the mind of anybody who participated in drawing up such a document, was there any hint, any thought of something of this magnitude being in the hands of people to use against each other? And that's what it's turned out to be. We live in a very different world in the 21st century than we did in the 1700s. Obviously, things are different. There were no such things as assault weapons back then. And if Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and George Washington and all those guys were around today, whose side do you think they would be on? Seriously, whose side do you think they would be standing on this issue? It would not be the NRA, I can guarantee you that. It would be the people who want to live freely, safely, happily, all that kind of thing. It's a no-brainer. Ban assault weapons. They are assault weapons. For God's sake, what possible use other than assaulting individuals or a whole lot of individuals? What possible use is an assault weapon other than that? Okay, that is not defense in any, unless you have an army storming your house or you're hunting an entire herd of deer at once. And neither of those I really see as realistic scenarios in real life. There's absolutely no justifiable need for this. Period. And yeah, you know, they're fine pieces of machinery, engineered very cleverly, and fun to use at target ranges. Fine. That is where they can be stored. That is where they can be used. And they can be admired in various places as well. You know, it's if we thought of these things as a controlled substance, you know, like, I don't know, a bag of cocaine or something like that, maybe then it would start to become clear, you know, that these things, why is a bag of cocaine illegal? Because it's dangerous. It's bad for people. It kills. Not the kind of thing you want your kid to stumble upon. And I'm sure we can raise all kinds of issues about how, well, we should have the right to do whatever, you know, have bags of cocaine in our house if we feel like it. Yeah, you know, okay, that's a thought. But it's not a widely held one because of the deadliness attached to it. We have no trouble realizing that. So something that is, I think, even more deadly than drugs, weapons that are designed to kill, if they are thought of in the same way, and we just realize that, yeah, these things are bad to have around, then it won't be so hard for us to say, okay, enough of them. Let's get rid of them all. And we treat them that way. We treat them like a controlled substance. We treat them like something you are not supposed to have. And if they're found in your house, like a bag of cocaine, you are in a lot of trouble. If they're found in your car, if they're found any place on your person, and God forbid you commit a crime using one of them. And every time one is found, it's destroyed, taken away, taken out of circulation. Yeah, it'll take decades to get through them all. But it's progress of a sort. Now, and here's the thing that you can't do with a bag of cocaine. You can bring it to the government. This is in my world, that is. It hasn't happened yet. I'm hoping this will happen. You can bring it to the government and get paid some amount. Maybe not as much as you paid for it, but some amount to give it up. You can't bring a bag of cocaine to the government. You'll probably get arrested for that. But if people just turn in these things and realize that they're not serving any good purpose, maybe we will make some progress from this. Maybe. And this doesn't speak to the whole issue of handguns, self-defense, hunting, that kind of thing. These are two different issues. It's always going to be possible to get your hands on some kind of a firearm. But what I think is so appalling in the cases that we've seen recently is the kinds of weaponry that people are able to get their hands on and the amount of damage they're able to inflict so quickly. Sure, you have a pistol or a rifle or something like that. I suppose you could storm into a classroom and take out one or two people before you're able to be overpowered. Well, that should be enough for any psycho to be happy, all right? That ability, if that's really so important. But when you have the ability to take out a couple of dozen people in a few seconds, on what earthly reason could there be to possess something of that kind of nature? And, you know, the argument that I hear, I haven't heard it recently, and I'm happy not to have heard it recently because I don't think I could handle it. But the argument I hear mostly is for defense against other people with the same kinds of weapons. So we're all living in this this TV world where everyone's shooting at each other. And some of the things I have heard in the last few days, some of the other ways of dealing with these problems involve tightening up security at schools. Well, you know what? That is really putting an insufficient bandage on the wound. Because that's accepting this kind of a world where assaults on schools are something we plan for. That's an indication of something that's really wrong with society. And yeah, you know, we should secure buildings, I suppose. When I went to school, there were multiple doors. People could walk in. There weren't psychos everywhere. I'm not sure what changed. But what I'm hearing as suggestions are some really crazy things. Like only having one entrance to a school. Having armed cops. I guess that's something that's happening already. Armed cops in every school. I think that's sick. I think that's definitely something that is not good. And it's not something that's good for our kids. Another brilliant idea I heard, and these are from intelligent people. No more windows. Yeah, because people can shoot through windows, they can break windows and get in. So let's teach our kids in these subterranean bunkers and have them all be prepared to be assaulted at any moment. I believe it was in Texas they were trying to figure out how to get kids to attack somebody who attacked them, and you know, sixth graders. Yeah, these are more symptoms of the same disease. And what you wind up, even in the best case scenario, are a bunch of really paranoid, aggressive people that expect trouble at every turn. And that's not the way to handle it. Well, let's move on to something else. Dunblane led to an overall decrease in this kind of thing over there, but it also led to something more disturbing in a different place in Australia, a place called Port Arthur. A month later, there was another killing spree. 35 people were killed, 23 wounded at the historic Port Arthur prison colony, which I don't think was serving as a prison at the time. It was a tourist site, southeastern Tasmania. Martin Bryant, 28-year-old from Newtown. Oh, my God. I didn't know it had the same name as the place that just happened. Okay, he came from Newtown in Australia. Eventually pleaded guilty to the crimes, was given 35 life sentences without possibility of parole. And what's particularly interesting about this, his motivation was never really given out, only to his lawyer. His lawyer supposedly was told. Now, this lawyer later released a book outlining that Bryant was motivated largely by the media surrounding the recent Dunblane massacre. And from the moment he was captured, he was constantly wanting to know how many people he had killed, and he seemed impressed by the number. So, yeah, you know, sometimes you have this fascination, this desire to be in the media. But I'm very hesitant to say the media should not report stories like this. Certainly there are ways to report things without glamorizing them or without fixating on things too much. And certainly there are ways that in other parts of life, entertainment, movies, TV, video games, we don't have to always focus on the violence, on the killing, because people are influenced by this. But I'm loath to say that things should be banned. Artistic expression should never be banned. But we need to take a good look at ourselves if we're too fascinated by the violence and nothing else. Because we might have some kind of psychological issues if that is something that is prevalent in society. But in any event, making access to the hardware that makes it so easy, making that difficult, making the access difficult or impossible, that's a priority. That's something we can do. And something I think we all have an obligation to do. You know, imagine if instead of an assault weapon, it was a button, okay? Like a button that you pressed it and you could kill 100 people just by pressing the button. Now, you know, there are people who will say that they have a God-given right to press buttons, and I'm sure probably somewhere that's written. But the point is, if you make it this easy for people to do these things, people do become unhinged, and they will press that button. Or if it's 100 people, 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people, I guarantee you that folks you know will press that button at some time. Because they can, because it's easy, because it's there for them to do that. So, we make it harder. We make it something that is not so so simple to do. Ask yourself, how easy is it for you to get a weapon and go on a rampage? I know you don't want to do that, but let's say something happened inside your brain that made you do that. How hard would it actually be? What would stop you if you were somewhat clever and could figure out a way to get around certain challenges? Way too easy. Let's listen to this report from the BBC concerning the events in Port Arthur that I just alluded to and how they were dealt with and how that might apply to where we are now in this country.
The Port Arthur massacre still haunts Australians. 16 years after 35 people were shot dead at this historic site in Tasmania, two children were among those killed. 28-year-old Martin Bryant never gave a reason for his slaughter and is now serving multiple life sentences. What followed was a collective expression of grief, then anger, then a clamour for action. The Prime Minister, John Howard, recognised and responded to the public's revulsion.
I'd always had a strong view that Australians shouldn't have guns unless they really needed them for their work or genuinely for their self-protection while they were farmers.
Just 12 days after the shootings, Australia's state and federal governments agreed to enact sweeping new gun controls. Rapid-fire rifles were banned. All individuals had to register their weapons. But crucially, the government went further. It began a gun buyback scheme, where it purchased weapons at market value, all paid for by a temporary increase in the country's Medicare levy. The results were remarkable. In all, around 700,000 weapons were handed in, at a cost of about $300 million. In the 18 years before the Port Arthur massacre, there were 13 mass shootings. In the 16 years since, there haven't been any. Experts on gun use say America can learn from Australia's experience.
The key in Australia was to have those sensible gun controls alongside the gun buyback. And it's a matter of getting that first gun out of the households. It'd be so terrific if the United States could do that. A country which every day loses 25 people to gun homicides and 45 people to gun suicides.
But others say scaling up Australia's experience to meet America's challenge may not be realistic for President Obama.
To do something like Australia did, which would involve, on the same scale as Australia, would involve confiscating or buying back 40 million firearms. Now, I cannot see Americans doing that.
In the 16 years since the Tasmania massacre, the risk of dying from gunshot in Australia has halved, with 200 lives a year saved. The country is not gun or crime free, but that day it learned a tragic lesson that it has sought not to inflict on its citizens again. Duncan Kennedy, BBC News, in Sydney.
And that report indicates that there is possibility to make changes. Now, yeah, difficult in this country, maybe impossible, but we need to try. We need to try and change the direction because, honestly, I don't think we can survive this. I don't think we can survive these kinds of events taking place. And what I mean by that is we'll turn into a country that is just fixated, even more so, with weapons, with violence, and the rest of the world will simply walk right past us and do more productive things. And we'll become completely irrelevant and a joke, really. More so than we might think we are now. So, I think we have to keep the pressure on. We have to make sure that this does not die. This shock that we feel right now, that we channel that into something that results in a safer society, a more healthy society. A place where kids can be kids. Not have to worry about this kind of crap. It's extremely distressing, and I know it affects a lot of other people as well. All right, we're out of time. Got basketball coming up. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go out with one more song from the Dunblane EP. Good night.
Evening comes and light is fading, and your heart is heavy from the tears. Lift up your eyes and look to heaven, where 17 new stars have appeared. They shine their light down upon us, the message of their love is clear. Lost familiar voices softly whispering in the wind and pleading that this time we will hear. Throw these guns away, throw these guns away. They've caused this world too much pain. Let our old friends play in a safer day. Say the bands of Dunblane. Retoire Perun in the barn. Here.